Money FM 89.3, best of your money. Money and Me on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3.
You've probably heard the term bandied about in the media, quantitative easing, but what is it actually? What does QE mean and how effective is it? Former US Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke answered that question back in 2014 when he famously said, QE works in practice, but it doesn't work in theory. Now, with COVID-19 ravaging economies across the globe, an increasing number of central banks are turning to this once unconventional monetary tool. But how does quantitative easing work? Is it a tool that's appropriate for Singapore? And will QE help stave off or at least shorten a global downturn? We put these questions to Dr. Michael Berman. He's CEO and co-founder of Psyquation. They're an AI-driven analytics platform that churns out actionable insights for traders. Good morning, Michael. A good day over in Australia. I see your banks are doing well.
Hi, Michelle. Nice to be here.
So Australia in the green this morning, yeah?
Yeah, it's in the green this morning, but that's after, unfortunately, a shocking quarter where, if you talk about world markets, certainly the US was the worst quarter since 2008. So today is a little bit of green, but I'm not sure how long-lived that will be.
All right. Michael, this week, central banks in Australia and New Zealand took their first forays into the world of QE, or quantitative easing. Israel's central bank resumed bond buying for the first time in more than a decade, and we're seeing more QE in the US, Europe, and UK. Help us out with the economics for a moment. What exactly is quantitative easing, and what is the difference between QE and just printing money?
Okay. So what I'm going to try and do here is keep things really basic and speak about the fundamentals, because unfortunately what people tend to do is they throw around big words or buzzwords and they take very fundamental concepts and overcomplicate them. It is complicated, so let me not minimize that, but I'd just like to cover some first principles, just kind of set the scene before we go into what actually QE is and if it's, is it the same as printing money and all that. But, the first principles I just wanted to mention is there's no such thing as a free lunch, okay? And my gran and grandpa always used to say, save for a rainy day. So those fundamental principles you need to keep in the back of your mind. But let's talk a bit about what this central banking tool is all about. Mm. So we've seen over the last couple of weeks, and for years for that matter, but more recently spreading across the globe, where central banks and governments are throwing everything, including the kitchen sink, at trying to solve this massive shock that's happened to the economy through the coronavirus. And they're resorting to very unconventional means to try and kind of replace what has fallen out from people being locked up or holding back from their typical ways of life that they've had over centuries. So QE is essentially what the central banks are doing. They're buying debt further down the risk curve, so longer duration debt. It could be just government debt, but it's broader than just that. They can buy mortgage-backed securities, and in some cases,
unfortunately, Michael, the phone line is breaking up, so we're having difficulty hearing you. I wonder if you could just repeat your last sentence.
Yeah, what I was saying, sorry about that, is central banks typically, to apply this quantitative easing, what they're doing is they're buying government securities that are longer dated than the shorter end of the curve. So they're buying what could be 10-year treasuries or longer dated government bonds. Mm-hmm. But they're also doing more than that. They're going beyond the government.
Unfortunately, a really unstable line, Michael. We're going to have to pause hit the pause button, and we're going to have to reconnect with you again and see whether we can get a more stable connection. Dr. Michael Berman is CEO and co-founder of PsyQuation, helping us understand QE this morning. How does it work? Is it appropriate? Will it help stave off a global downturn? And could it be used here in Singapore? Help us with where you were leaving off with QE. Yeah,
sure. It just shows you what a crazy time in the world we are. I'm having problems with internet. We're having problems with the cell signal. Just shows you how the systems weren't designed for this overload. Gosh. But coming back to QE, so what's happening here is, let's start with what the role of central banks are and is. Central banks were designed to be bankers of last resort.
Yes.
And we can go into all of that in a little bit of detail down the track. But they also were there to kind of to set the interest rates and this interest rate policy within a country. And they're able to do that by increasing and decreasing the money supply in the marketplace. So it's an indirect way of printing money. You know, there's this term printing money. Printing money is actually not done by the Fed, for instance. It's done by the U.S. Treasury. They print the dollars and cents that are in circulation. But when people are talking about printing money, they're talking more generally. It's about creating money out of thin air, which is what central banks are able to do. And there's a problem with it, because if you're creating something out of thin air, there's no such thing as this free lunch I was speaking about earlier. So, yes, you can try and fill in the gaps and try and stimulate where there's no demand. People aren't spending money. You can try and increase that demand by making money cheap, which is effectively printing money. And so this is what the governments have been, the central banks have been doing for the last decades since the past crisis, is they've been lowering the cost of money by lowering interest rates. And by doing that, they've been increasing the supply of money. And that's what has fueled, you could call it, further bubbles by people having cheap money. They've gone and bought property, and they've gone and bought stocks in the marketplace. Now, what's happened is that the central banks got themselves into a little bit of a tight spot, because they've lowered rates basically down to zero. So there's nowhere else for them to go. And they still need to act as these bankers of last resort. So we've got this shock that's happened to the world economies, where there's a lack of demand. And then there's also people and banks are in desperate need of money. So what these central banks are having to do now is provide the liquidity and also keep interest rates low. So what are they doing is they're buying these bonds that are being put on the marketplace, and they're trying to keep the yield curve, which is, you know, the interest rates over a period of let's say 10 years, they're trying to keep those interest rates really low. And the way they do it is they buy those particular bonds as the Fed or as the central bank. So the central bank's balance sheet expands, buying those bonds, and that's how they pump liquidity into the marketplace.
Okay, I'm just going to break in to try and understand it and break it down a little bit for our listeners.
Yeah, sure.
So when we hear the Fed saying they're going to buy corporate ETFs, for example,
where
is that money coming from? Where do central banks get the funds to buy these bonds? And
Great question. It's out of thin air. So basically, they just create an entry on the computer ledger that becomes a credit in a bank account with one of the borrowing banks. So just to keep it really simple, because it can get complicated, is that the money comes from thin air. So the only thing that is meant to avoid just creating trillions, which they're already doing, to stop them from just printing more and more money is the threat of inflation.
Yes.
So that's meant to be the corporate throttle, or the throttle that holds central banks from just printing endless amounts of money. But technically speaking, without going into the nuts and bolts of it, they can print as much money as they want. Because what we have today is a concept in currencies called, or in money, called fiat currency, which means it's not backed by anything. So money in the old days used to be backed, they used to call it sound money. Sound money is backed by by something like gold. Mm. Back in the day, money was backed by the amount of gold that you held. So you couldn't just go print money. You had to have more gold in order to create more currency. Mm. But in 1971, Nixon got rid of that, and there was no longer a gold standard, and money was free. That all currencies today are basically fiat currencies. So you can print as much as you want.
I have a question there. Again, the guard against printing too much cash was inflation, according to economic theory. Simply put, that there will be more money in the system chasing the same amount of goods, so pushing up prices. And in countries like Venezuela and Zimbabwe, we've seen the ill effects of printing too much, hyperinflation, currencies that are virtually worthless. In this new COVID-19 world, though, some economists argue inflation is not a concern. Do you agree?
Correct. At the moment, it's actually not a major concern, and this is what's given these academics and these economists and central bankers the license to actually go and print this money, because they're saying if you look at, depending on what basket you use to measure your inflation, they're correct. There isn't a lot of inflation in the market at the moment, so. This is why I believe they're actually going to get away with it for a period of time, because the founding father of monetary economics, Milton Friedman, was dead scared of. All central bankers are dead scared. The one is deflation, and this is what we're currently facing at the moment. There's not really that much demand, as we can see. People, there might be a few pockets of consumer demand for certain household goods that we need that are absolute essentials. But you don't need to go and buy that new car now or other stuff that's not essential. So demand isn't really there, and therefore inflation isn't necessarily a big thing. But what we're doing with all of this is we're creating a lot of moral hazard, because by just the whole system was designed that, yes, in crazy circumstances, when there's a shock to the system, be it a war, that government and its different arms of government, such as, let's say, the central bank, even though they're meant to be independent, mm-hmm. are there to kind of plug the gap. But the theory goes that, yes, they plugged the gap in those times, but in good times, Keynes said, you meant to withdraw the stimulus in the good times to kind of pay back what you did what you've spent in the bad times. Mm-hmm. And we didn't see that. We didn't see that after the GFC, certainly the US resorted to quantitative easing, and Japan resorted to it and all that. Mm. During the last 10 years, we saw no withdrawal. In fact, when we did see a withdrawal, when the Fed tried to shrink its balance sheet and kind of reverse the QE, mm-hmm. the markets collapsed. And therefore, what we found is that we've become addicted to this kind of free money, effectively. Right. This is the problem we've got on our hands right now.
In your view, does it matter who is doing it? For example, could QE be more effective in the US than it is in Europe or perhaps Australia, where you're joining us from now?
Look, it definitely depends on the state of the government's current, what's their debt to GDP, because we know that countries that have too high a debt to GDP will eventually lead, it gets to a threshold where it actually eventually leads to potential default. Now, that's not going to happen in the US, because most debt is dollar denominated, so they can just print more money. But one thing I failed to mention, when we said, I said to you that you ask the question, where does the money come from? So they just create the money. But what they do when they create the money is they also create debt alongside it. So there's the asset of the money, and then there's the liability, which is debt. And that has to be paid back eventually. So, you know, the more QE you apply, eventually it has to be removed. And can it be done? Can it be done responsibly? That's up to different governments. And I'm not sure government is the best placed person or entity to do that. I think the free market is better suited.
It's crazy times, as you say, Michael. Isn't moral hazard, though, pretty low on the list of concerns of, you know, the ramifications of QE, though? And this is quite different from 2008, when it was really the banks that got us into the great financial crisis.
Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, me as a libertarian, a free marketer who's, let's say, anti-big government, I'm faced with a dilemma here, because people are starving. People are without work. What do you do? Do you just sit back and say, well, look, it's tough, and only the rich will survive, and the people who've saved for a rainy day? So I think there's a definite need for responsible government and stepping in and helping. But it becomes a slippery slope, because where does it really end? So we've seen when they did it on the scale during the GFC, it just became so big that the markets couldn't live without it. And yes, they've come in to save the day today. Will the markets be able to ever get off all this help? I don't think so. So yeah, we will see government own more and more, because I think businesses will still go bankrupt. And the way you see it with airlines, what do you do if an airline's not flying and it's not going to fly properly for a year? The government will end up having to bail it out, as it will the banks. And yeah, so we will be living in a big government kind of world for the foreseeable future.
Actually, on that point, I want to ask you and bring us back to the U.S. for a moment. I was reading a CNBC article, and it said the Fed is now buying corporate debt via bond ETFs. Do you think the Fed could start buying stocks? And if it does, what does this mean for companies and investors?
Great question. And yes, the short answer is yes. And the technical answer is it's illegal. But the way they get around it, and they've done it before, is that they set up special purpose vehicles. So they set up a company, for want of a better word, and they get the Treasury to guarantee the shares in that company. And then that company goes and buys shares. So yes, they can do it. And they did it in Japan. They've done it in Japan. Yeah, all it does is it just muddies the water in terms of what's real fair value. If there's this artificial pin or this artificial support that's holding the shares up, is that a true value? And I think economics has taught us over the ages that to find fair value, you need a free market. And yes, so maybe maybe for this crazy period of time, there's argument. You can make an argument that we should have a pegged or an artificial price. But I just don't know where it ends. Eventually, it ends in hyperinflation. There's no other way I can see this playing out. But I don't see that happening in the short term. So, gold would be interesting. You know, everyone thinks gold's your knee-jerk place to put money, because that's sound money. It's been around for thousands of years as a medium of exchange. But we're not seeing huge appreciation in gold, and that's because I think there's been such a shock to demand that we won't necessarily see that inflation come through in the short term. But I think it's going to come, but it will be in years to come. It won't be, I don't think, in the next year or two, or maybe even three. But I can't see us getting off this QE, this fiscal and monetary stimulus that we've become accustomed to. And eventually, down the track, it's going to lead to hyperinflation.
Dr. Michael Berman is CEO and co-founder of PsyQuation. They're an AI-driven analytics platform turning out actionable insights for traders, helping us understand QE this morning. This has been Money and Me.
Information on Money FM. Please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.